This is a real honor, and I don't say that to patronize you, but we have Luis Perez of Los Lobos join us in studio here at KCSN, and I want to welcome you. I really appreciate you coming by to say hi.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great. It's a wonderful place here. All these new buildings, and yes. It's great.
It is fantastic. You know, we're in new studios. We're in the Valley Performing Arts Center. It's a beautiful facility, and we're blessed to have that. And as we've kicked off what we consider to be a new iteration of this radio station, having you come in, and this is actually my first live interview.
Wow, cool.
That we have on air. And cool. I think it's fitting because, you know, it has been said, and we certainly believe it here at KCSN, that Los Lobos are true icons in this city. But I know that it wasn't always so. And I want to go back in the beginning of time when Los Lobos first formed and what you were up against and how you found your way into both success in Los Angeles and then ultimately international and global success. So tell me about those early days, the early gigs, the surroundings. Let's go down memory lane.
Well, going way back, of course, we all grew up in the neighborhoods of East Los Angeles. We met each other in high school, James E. Garfield High School. I'm pointing, of course, as a radio, right?
Right. He's got a Garfield hat on for all of you. He still supports.
We met, we were friends ever, you know, before we were ever musicians together. I played music, David Hidalgo played music, Conor Lozano, Cesar Rosas. But that's not what kind of brought us together. We just knew each other from the neighborhoods. I knew Conrad because he lived two blocks away from me. Caesar knew Dave because they went to the same junior high together. They lived within a mile of each other. Mm-hmm. We all kind of found ourselves at James A. Garfield High School in East L.A. We became friends. Conrad had this power trio, kind of blue cheer kind of thing, you know, going on. I could hear him clearly from where I lived, about two blocks away. Caesar had a big, like 12, 14-piece R&B band, kind of Tower of Power-ish kind of thing. Dave and I had a band where we just played obscure covers off of favorite records and a garage band. So whenever we weren't gigging, if I wasn't playing a gig, I'd be at Caesar's gig. If Caesar wasn't playing, he'd be at ours and Conrad's. And so when we got out of high school, we just hung out together as friends. And the natural progression of things is for us to actually start playing together. But that's where the interesting thing happened. Instead of forming a rock band, we formed a group specifically to play regional Mexican folkloric music, which is really unusual for kids right out of high school.
Right.
And the reason why we did that was totally a fluke. We decided that we were going to learn a song to play for serenade one of our moms. And so we pulled out records out of the collections at home, you know, Miguel Aces Mejia, Lola Beltran, Antonio Aguilar. And we...
My parents had all those records, too.
Of course. Of course, in the barrios of...
of Youngstown.
Of Youngstown, right. So we set out to learn a couple songs, and at that point we realized that, this is kind of complicated stuff. The music that always played as kind of a soundtrack to our lives suddenly became really very interesting to us. Like any other kid growing up in the United States, and in our case growing up in East Los Angeles, predominantly Mexican and Mexican-American community, we were going to homogenize. We watched television. We had, I loved Jimi Hendrix. Conrad loved Lou Cheer. And, so here we were. Listening to the music and being intrigued by it. So the same fingers that were playing, you know, the guitar solo to Spoonful by The Cream were suddenly playing, you know, on a Requinto Jarocha.
Right.
Where usually, like, if you go to, like, a wedding on a weekend in East Los Angeles, the afternoon will be the reception, moms, tias, dads, family, kids. There'll be a mariachi or a trio that will entertain. And then about 6 o'clock, the rock band shows up for the dance in the evening.
When we talk about you walked away from what you were supposed to do, rock scene, and now all of a sudden you've grown in notoriety to where you're impacting that scene as it is, and you got to try to integrate, and it had to be tough on a lot of levels.
We found ourselves kind of like a dead end, playing like in a Mexican restaurant, doing exactly what we'd never wanted to do, is to trivialize our you know, the music of our culture. But then there was something happening on the other side of the LA River, and this was the punk rock scene that was going on. And we weren't living in a vacuum with Mexican music. We were still aware of everything else that was going on. So we started making trips across the river to see bands, because it was just exciting, this new thing, young people kind of reclaiming music.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of a band forming on the way to the gig. You know, well, yeah. What are you? You're going to be the drummer. You're going to be the bass player. And this is on the way to the show.
Real DIY stuff.
Yeah. Right. So we started making our way over there. And by then, we had already kind of transitioned a bit. We had moved into Norteño music, which, if you really look at it, it's guitar, bass, drums, and an accordion. Okay, that's kind of strange. But it was kind of set up like a rock band.
Mm-hmm.
We're already doing that. So when we saw within the punk rock new music movement happening in Hollywood, within that movement, there was the Roots Revival,
yes.
Rockabilly, the Blasters, mm-hmm. R&B to a certain degree. And we said, wow, it's interesting. Maybe there's a place for us out there. Then the next thing happened, 1987. La Bamba hit really big.
Right.
And that really kind of threw a sort of a wrench in it a little bit, you know, because at that point we became a commercially successful band.
Mm-hmm.
We were, I think after that, be perfectly honest with you, it eclipsed just about everything that happened before that. At that point, we're known around the world as the band that does La Bamba.
What's it going to be like when you walk out on stage at the Greek knowing this is home and we are literally, kings of the hill, if you were?
Well, playing in Los Angeles, obviously, it's like a homecoming. We'll hear people out in the audience just yelling, "Kai Conrad!" Because this is home for us, and it does feel great to be home, playing to a big audience of our neighbors and friends. We're from LA. You know, no matter where we go, may it be Milan or Richmond, Virginia, we're always introduced as from East Los Angeles, right. Los Lobos, no matter what.